Are you ready?
I'm Luke Janesco, and with me,
I'm Tony Romano.
Concept of this podcast is we're going to be running down our top tens of every week. We're going to do a different top ten, except for this week because we've just established what we're going to be doing. We're just going to be introing everything, figuring out what we're going to be laying out our chemistry here this week, talking about how we got into wrestling and why we like it. Because Tony, you don't really watch current wrestling anymore, do you?
I don't. Ever since the E came in to the WWF, and it became entertainment, not about the wrestling, I kind of lost my interest, and it became too PG. It took too much of the fun away of watching wrestling because it was geared towards kids, and as you get older, it's not geared towards you anymore. So like it's hard to follow something that isn't even geared towards you anymore. No matter how much of a nostalgic factor it has to you because you watched it when you grew up. And once it all became about, you know, John Cena and the WWE, and there was really no other competitors because, you know, TNA was really bad back then, even though it's not very good still.
Yep.
But I will admit that once Hulk Hogan and Eric Bischoff took over TNA in January of whatever, 2 years ago, I started watching TNA. 4 months solid of never missing an Impact, and I ordered two of the pay-per-views because I really thought that this was going to be a new formation of the WCW, which was what I always watched. But I was dead wrong about that.
Yeah, in which I could see an older WCW fan enjoying what Hogan and Bischoff brought because it was pretty much old WCW with, I mean, they brought in the Nasty Boys and older guys that, in my opinion, really had no business being on TV anymore. So I could see where an older WCW fan would enjoy TNA at that point in time, which, in my opinion, TNA was at one of its most unbearable times because of Hogan was bringing in guys that he thought that he knew from WCW, which, obviously, 10 years ago, they may have been okay, but at that point in time, I didn't like it. So, yeah.
I agree with you. Like, it wasn't, but it was more nostalgic for me. For I can see someone who's current into wrestling that didn't watch WCW, like someone who was too young back then or someone who just didn't watch WCW at all. I can understand how that made it look terrible and made it unbearable to watch. But as someone who watched WCW, you know, for most of their, you know, childhood growing up and seeing all the people, like, I didn't know anything really about TNA. I knew of wrestlers. I knew AJ Styles and I knew Samoa Joe. I knew their big names. But when I tuned in, I saw Eric Bischoff, Hulk Hogan, Kevin Nash, Sting, Ric Flair, the Nasty Boys, X-Pac,
Scott
Hall, Scott Steiner. I saw all them. And there was probably more that I don't even remember from like when they early were starting off in TNA and the new regime. Oh, but they had Jay Lethal, who was pretty much Macho Man.
Oh, boy.
And then, but yeah, you have all those on there, and it makes you, and Hulk Hogan came out to the variation of the NWO black and white music.
Yep.
And, you know, me and my cousin, we both really got back into wrestling. Yeah, he still watches TNA, as far as I know. He still watches TNA, and he still prefers it over WWE. I if I'm going to watch wrestling right now, I'm tuning in to WWE because at least it's a better product versus what TNA is putting out right there. Because TNA, I know they just fired Vince Russo, I believe. Yep. And, you know, that's a great move because I don't even know why they brought him in the first place. Because, you know, as you saw time in and time out, every time Vince Russo, besides maybe when he first started out in his career, he was no good in terms of being a writer for a store wrestling company or booking matches or, you know, doing whatever, because he just gets these ridiculous things that he does, and it's just that's what killed WCW, and he's hated amongst WCW fans for that reason.
Yeah, because he is credited toward really creating the Attitude Era in WWE, which, I mean, it had good things, but then there were a whole bunch of terrible things, terrible ideas that he are credited to coming up with. And one of the things that everyone says is that Vince Russo comes up with good ideas, and as we all know, he comes up with bad ideas.
Mm-hmm.
And when it was WWF at the time, they said Vince was Russo's filter, so it was he come up with good ideas and bad ideas, and he would run them through Vince. And Vince would be like, okay, this is shit, this is good, and the stuff in between will fix it and make it good. So it was, he had that filter with Vince, as opposed to when he went to WCW, it was Vince Russo created the Attitude Era for WWE, so we're just going to let him have full creative control, let him do whatever he wants. And, you know, so he could come up with some good ideas, but he'd also come up with a lot of bad ideas, which he didn't have that filter, so it was, we're going to go on WCW TV and just run everything Vince Russo does. And same thing with TNA when they brought him in. I don't think he had that filter either, because, I mean, if you watch TNA when he was in control of creative, there was a ton of bad stuff. I mean, we're still seeing the effects because he was just released.
Mm-hmm.
So I think Russo can be good if he's got that filter. But if he doesn't have that filter,
he's got complete control. It's
your company's going down the drain.
And, like, I don't know why none of these companies are learning from this. Maybe, I don't know. Maybe they just feel too close to him. They feel he's talented enough that maybe he will check his ego at the door, but he never does.
Yeah.
And, you know, Vince McMahon is, he's super smart in terms of how he runs a wrestling business. And that's why he is the most successful, you know, wrestling promoter ever. And he aligns himself with people like Jim Ross and Pat Patterson, Gerald Briscoe, the people who know wrestling and are not trying to do anything, you know, fancy with it. They're trying to be creative, but they're not trying to take it to an unrealistic level where people aren't going to start believing this or people aren't going to lose interest in this product. And, you know, I think that's why WWE has always been, you know, besides for the little bit that WCW had control of the ratings, I think that's why WWE has always been on top. And you have to, you know, just give it to Vince McMahon. Tip your hat to him. And because he knows wrestling. He knows his business. And, you know, as much as I hated him when he first purchased WCW, you can't, I mean, I'm sure he didn't want, he wanted to kill WCW, and he said it publicly, but he said it for the entertainment purpose. I don't really think he wanted to completely wipe out his competition. So that way, you know, I mean, you do that, eventually you start losing fans because you have no one to compete against, and you get, you know, you pretty much are running unopposed. And that's when WWE started going downhill.
Yeah.
Because they had no one to push their creative juices, no one to push their entertainment. They just were doing it to put on a show to get money because they really were in no danger.
Yeah. And have you read Eric Bischoff's book when it came out in WWE, Controversy Creates Cash?
I have not read it.
I'm going to let you borrow that book because since you're a big WCW fan, reading that book, you will see how many obstacles WCW had to overcome to even be on TV. And then once they closed their doors, it was ridiculous, just everything that was against them, because Eric Bischoff planned to buy the company. Day of, he was going to buy it, and hours before he's going to buy it, he finds out they sell it to Vince. And Vince's plan was to keep WCW a separate brand so that he would have WWE and WCW. But the problem was that he couldn't find a channel to put it on. And then I think WWE was running with TNN at that time. And they wouldn't put it on their channel or any of the channels they're associated with because they didn't want to have that competition. Even though it's still owned by WWE, they didn't want to have that competition that's the WCW brand, even though, you know, it's the same. So he wanted to keep it a separate brand, but he had no channel to put it on. So it was like, I've got this whole brand, all these guys, and I have no channel to put it on. So it was like, okay, now I got to throw them on WWE. So that was pretty much the death of WCW right there, because Vince really did want to keep it as a separate brand and let it go and run and see what he could get out of it. But he didn't have a channel to put it on. And if you don't have a channel to put it on, there's really no point in trying to run another company, because, you know, no one's going to see it unless you go to the show that you run, you know, every state to state. It's like an independent show. So that was pretty much response. The bad TV, because WCW at the ratings, when they closed their doors, were getting, you know, in between 2.0 to 3.0. And, I mean, nowadays, SmackDown runs, they're lucky to get a 2.0. And so it wasn't the ratings. Ratings would still be considered strong. Not as strong as they were, you know, when they were getting 8s and 9s and stuff. But they were still strong to not close the doors. But the politics in the Turner, I don't know what you call it, Ted Turner, whatever he is in charge of, everybody there hated wrestling except Ted Turner. And Ted Turner had no idea how to run a wrestling company. So he would just put guys that had no idea on how to run a wrestling company in charge. And Eric Bischoff was coming up with these ideas, and they wouldn't let him do anything. So it was like he was so many obstacles, and then WCW pretty much died. And that's, you know, Vince wanted to keep it alive, but there was no chance that it was ever going to stay alive.
Yeah, I mean, there's no way you can keep, and it's the same thing that we did with ECW. We tried to, you know, revive that and then have an own show for it, but, you know, it just didn't work out, and that's why they got rid of ECW. You just can't have two brands within one brand. It's just not going. You can have two shows, like a Raw and SmackDown, but you can't have two brands inside one.
Yeah.
It just won't work. And, you know, Vince bought WCW for $1 million, right?
Yeah, it was something crazy like that.
Did you watch that documentary, The Rise and Fall?
Yeah.
And you saw, like, I mean, like, some of the wrestlers, like Chris Jericho, said, you know, shit, if I would have known that it was going to be $1 million, I would have bought the company.
Yeah, just for the library alone, because, I mean, you would have made, if you own that WCW footage,
Vince McMahon has probably made 50 times that,
yep,
in terms of just selling NWO t-shirts and WCW Best of DVDs and the Rise and Fall of WCW and the NWO, anything with the NWO, because NWO is so marketable.
Yep.
And is so popular. And I still see people wearing NWO shirts more than any other wrestling shirt out there. And, like, I don't see DX shirts anymore. And, you know, I work at a entertainment company in terms of we sell, like, DVDs and, like, video games and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. And, you know, we have a whole wrestling section where people come in, and, you know the people, the wrestling people coming in, because they're wearing wrestling shirts, and they're always wearing a WCW NWO t-shirt, black and white or black and red, doesn't matter. I've even seen an LWO t-shirt.
I didn't even know they sold those. I thought it was just like a TV thing. I didn't know they sold
LWO. No, there was actually LWO shirts out there. And I can't even explain how many times I've seen these shirts, but I've only seen maybe one DX shirt. I've maybe only seen one, you know, current John Cena shirt on some little kid, probably.
Yeah.
I mean, I see a couple Stone Cold shirts go in there. I see a couple Rock t-shirts. But, you know, for the most part, it's still WCW t-shirts that are coming in, buying a WWF DVD or buying a Best of ECW DVD. I don't know. It's crazy how much, you know, impact NWO has alone just in terms of the revenue that Vince McMahon's probably making off that.
Yeah, because the Austin 316 shirt, that is like the highest sold shirt, guaranteed. But I think right a second to that one is the NWO shirt. I think those are the top two shirts you will see from wrestling forever. Just because Austin, yeah, probably the biggest name ever in pro wrestling, I would say. And then NWO, definitely a close second just because of you had Hogan, Hall, and Nash, and then the impact they had because they ran. I mean, it was good, and then it kind of turned to shit just because they were throwing everyone in there.
Well, yeah, okay, they had NWO. It was just the NWO Black and White. It was just consistent of Hulk Hogan, Kevin Nash, and Scott Hall. And then, you know, they started to expand. You know, Eric Bischoff, they got Scott Steiner, they got Buff Bagwell, they got Vincent. They, you know, they had all these people, and they all had roles, you know, the Giant. And then, you know, they wanted to create another one. So they had the Wolfpack. They had Kevin Nash break off and then start his own. And then you had Sting bouncing back and forth, Scott Hall bouncing back and forth. And you had, you know, primarily Luger and the Wolfpack. He never really joined the Black and White. And you had Macho Man. He went back and forth for a little bit. And, you know, that was okay. I mean, it bothered me that these guys kept switching, you know, back and forth constantly. But, you know, when you're little, it doesn't matter. And you,
yeah,
as long as you're seeing them wearing some kind of NWO, in my opinion, because I was a huge NWO guy. And once they started combining the two and they had that NWO Elite or whatever I think they called it, where it was black, white, and red.
Yeah, I love when they had the NWO shirt that was white and black, and then they had like the red like blood splurts on it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it was creative and it was, you know, it was a good idea, but it started to get out of control because they had so many guys, and at one point there was probably like 20 to 25 guys in the NWO or affiliated with the NWO, because I mean, you even had Disco Inferno coming out in NWO Wolfpack T-shirts. He was the They made fun of him like he was their bitch pretty much, but
yeah,
he still came out wearing the NWO Wolfpack jersey, and his theme song even had some wolves howling in his disco music. And, you know, it just started to get out of control, and it started to, and I think that's about when the NWO started to lose its popularity. And, you know, they tried to revive it on a couple occasions. They tried to revive it with Jeff Jarrett when the NWO 2000, I think is what they called it, when it was like more silver.
Yeah.
It was like black and silver.
It was like Steiner, Hart, and was it Nash?
It was Jeff Jarrett, Scott Steiner. I don't think Nash was in it. No, because Nash was in the, he was against it. It was, I believe. I'm not 100% sure on that. But I know like the Harris brothers were in this. Do you remember these guys, Ron and Don Harris?
Yeah, they were DOA and WWE and the Blue Brothers and WWE, and I know who they are.
Well, yeah, they were in it, and like they were like Jeff Jarrett's right hand men. And then like I remember like seeing like Buff Bagwell feuding against them, and I remember seeing DDP feuding against them. And then eventually it just turned into, and then when WCW really shit the bed was when they turned into just one huge faction versus one huge faction. We became the New Blood versus the Millionaires Club.
Yeah.
And that was the worst thing ever because you had just all the big names in the Millionaires Club and you had all the rising stars in the New Blood. And, you know, you had Jeff Jarrett, you had, and Vince Russo led it. But then you had the other side, you had the good guys, which was Sting and Ric Flair and DDP and Kevin Nash. And I don't think Goldberg was there anymore.
I don't remember.
I don't think
I was turning it on. At that point, I was turning it on when I could. It was
you weren't going out of your way to watch
it. Yeah, I was not going out of my way to watch it.
I don't blame you.
But I think that was WWE's downfall again because it was with the NWO, it became NWO versus WCW. So it was like just two good guys and bad guys, NWO and WCW. And then with the New Blood and Millionaires Club, again, it was like good guys and bad guys, and that was it. It was just like a gang war of old guys and new guys. It was like, I think they should have, with the New Blood faction, maybe five new guys against five old guys, and then just let WCW go on, so you'd have this main event feud of Millionaires Club and the New Blood, but you'd also have other storylines going on, so everything didn't have to revolve around are you in the Millionaires Club? Are you in the New Blood? Are you in NWO? Are you WCW? Like, I think that's where they went wrong with, we're just going to throw everyone in this big feud and not have these miniature feuds going on for, you know, the U.S. title, the Cruiserweight Championship, the tag belts. It was all just thrown in one, and it was like everyone lost their spot because there was only really two spots to be in.
So. Yeah, and the only time that the U.S. belt or the Cruiserweight belt, well, not even the Cruiserweight, not even talk about that, the tag team belt or the U.S. belt, the only time that those two were ever relevant is if either the Wolfpack or the, one of the Four Horsemen or one of the NWO had it.
Mm-hmm.
If anyone else had that title, like if it was on Booker T and Stevie Ray.
Stevie Ray,
if
yeah.
It was on the Harlem Heat, the tag team titles, and before Stevie Ray joined the NWO, if it was on them and they were feuding with the Nasty Boys, no one cared.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it just got so unnoticed because a non-title tag team match between Kevin Nash, Scott Hall, and Chris Benoit and Dean Malenko got more, you know, airtime and more promoting than the actual title match versus, you know, Harlem Heat and Nasty Boys. Like, it just, the belt didn't matter. It was just how they created this, how big the NWO was in terms of how WCW was using them.
Yep. And then you brought up Harlem Heat, which brings me to another point with how many teams were broken up because of the NWO-WCW feud, which Stevie Ray joined NWO. After he left Booker T, what did he do? I mean, what was the purpose in having him break away from Booker T? I mean, Booker T, his career was fantastic afterward, but it was like so many teams got broken up just because of, we're going to join NWO or WCW, just like Buff Bagwell and Scotty Riggs. The American Males, they were broken up. And, I mean, some of their careers did really take off afterward.
I mean, Bagwell's career took off.
Yeah.
From that.
Which, American Males, they were only on there for like a few weeks before they broke up, I think, is how I remember.
I think it was a couple months.
Couple months.
They weren't established tag team. You know what I mean? They were just a new up-and-coming tag team.
Yeah. And it just, I don't know, it goes back to breaking up things just to put them, for the sake of breaking up stuff, just to add to the NWO and WCW feud. And I don't know, I think certain people really did suffer from that.
Stevie Ray definitely suffered from it.
Yeah.
Because, like, honestly, you can see Buff Bagwell, what his role in the whole thing was, because there was a lot of stuff going on with Buff Bagwell in terms of, you know, he feuded with Rick Steiner, he feuded with, you know, Roddy Piper. Like, he feuded with some people within, you know, outside of the NWO, like, in terms of a side, and, you know, when he broke his neck, it was legit. Have you ever seen that video?
No, I don't think I have.
Oh, my God. You should watch that video because it, like, you can actually see his neck snap.
Oh, really?
And it was Rick Steiner who injured him doing a bulldog off the top rope. And, yeah, it took him a little bit to recover from that. And obviously, by the time he recovered, he was still using the neck brace just for entertaining purposes.
Yeah.
Just because they don't want him to just come out of nowhere after just breaking his neck. But, yeah, I mean, at least he was relevant in terms of him breaking up. But Stevie Ray, what did he do? Like, he came out with Vincent. That's about it. He came out and he did some singles matches. But there was no reason to have him break away from Booker T unless Booker T wanted, like, you know, backstage, unless he told the promoters, hey, I want to go off on my own. Like, that's the only reason I can see them trying to break it up, because they did nothing with Stevie Ray at that. He was just there. And once the NWO Elite, whatever, started, and then they still kept the NWO Black and White, but they called it NWO B. Do you remember this?
No.
And Hulk Hogan named Stevie Ray the leader of the NWO Black and White.
Did he?
It was the NWO B team. And it was him, Vincent, Scott Norton, Brian Adams. Like, it was like the lower end.
Yeah, what a group, huh?
The lower end NWO guys. And basically, they just were like the
job squad.
Yeah, that's pretty much what it was. And, like, it was, that's the most, that's the only thing Stevie Ray has amounted to in terms of his WWE or his NWO career.
Yeah. Which, I mean, Booker broke up with Stevie Ray, and I don't remember exactly too much that he did. I remember him going during the dying days of WCW, he got that mega push where he was champ. But up until that point, I don't remember too much. I know he had like a couple U.S. title reigns. I remember him doing the G.I. Bro gimmick at one point. And it was
when the Misfits in Action was going
on.
Yeah,
and I think that kind of was like ridiculous. And I think they could have just held on to Stevie Ray and Booker T as Harlem Heat feuding with the NWO. And I think that would have just got Booker T over.
I mean, I think they did reunite eventually down the road. I don't remember. I think there was a couple times when they reunited.
I remember them having that feud over when Ahmed Johnson came in and was Big T, and they were feuding over the who had the rights to T, like Booker T or Big T. Like, they took the T so Booker T could only be Booker at one point. And, I mean, I don't know who came up with that storyline, probably Russo. It was a terrible storyline. But, yeah, I don't remember them ever reuniting officially. Because I remember that feud happened either 99 or 2000, and WCW only went until, what, 2001?
2001 was their demise. I think it was, what, April 2001?
And I know, you know, obviously after that, Booker T got that mega push, and Stevie Ray was pretty much doing nothing.
Yeah, he was always doing nothing. Like, that's the thing. Like, once he broke from Booker, he was irrelevant. And, like, I remember, because I'm a huge Buff Bagwell fan, I remember Buff Bagwell when he got kicked out of the NWO. And he feuded with Steiner, and Steiner at the time had the U.S. title. And it was Slamboree. I don't remember the year, but it was Slamboree, maybe 99, maybe 2000. And it was Bagwell versus Scott Steiner for the U.S. title. And it was Buff Bagwell's like first single title shot. And I ordered that pay-per-view, you know, just because I wanted to see. I wanted Bagwell to win so bad. Yeah. And then I remember Stevie Ray came out and interfered in the match and cost Bagwell the match. Pretty much, Bagwell was going up to, I believe he was going up to do his blockbuster finishing move. And I believe Stevie Ray, because he had his slapjack.
Yeah, I remember that.
I believe he came out and he hit Bagwell with the slapjack at that when the ref wasn't looking. And then Steiner ended up winning the match. And I remember I was being so crushed. I never liked Stevie Ray again. But yeah, I mean, that's the most probably defining moment besides him getting lead of the NWO.
And then after he went to WWE, Stevie Ray just ended up, he commentated on Velocity for like, I don't know, 2 or 3 months.
And he didn't wrestle, though.
He never wrestled. He just did commentary.
He did the retirement, and he's one of the only people that retired and never came back.
And now I don't know what he's up to.
He's actually an independent wrestling school teacher. I've read.
Is it for Booker T's? Because I thought they didn't
It's somewhere in Texas.
Okay.
I don't know. I believe they're still. Yeah, I believe it's for Booker T's school. I think Stevie Ray runs it, though.
Okay, because last I heard, him and Booker were not on good terms, but I have no clue.
Well, when I read this, was about a year ago, 2 years ago. So
okay.
Maybe things have changed, but last time I read, he was running a school.
I haven't really heard anything from. I knew they weren't on good terms years and years ago. So, I mean, them being brothers, they probably patched it up, and now they're probably good, I would say. I really have no idea because I don't keep tabs on Stevie Ray, and I don't know too much about Booker T's personal life.
But you know what's funny thing about Booker T is, though, like, once he broke away from the tag team matches, how many times did he, because he still kept the Harlem Heat, like, outfit. Like, he still wore the Flames attire and all that. How many times did he, I don't know if you remember this because I know you were more of a WWE guy, but how many times did he face Disco Inferno for the television title? I swear to you that every time I ordered the pay-per-view, the first or second match of the event was Booker T versus Disco Inferno for the television title. It was always the same two guys, and they just kept exchanging the same title. And I don't know if you remember that.
No, I don't. But what baffles me is that the television championship being on a pay-per-view, which kind of defeats the purpose because the television championship was meant to be the title that was defended on TV all the time. And I remember it being defended on pay-per-views all the time, and it was like, come on, this title's supposed to be defended on television, but you're putting it on pay-per-views.
Yeah, I mean, and I still watched old WCW pay-per-views because I used to record them, you know, when I would pay-per-view them and I would record them to VHS tape, but then I ended up down the road, I got a VHS to DVD converter, so I converted all of them to DVD.
Do you have all these pay-per-views on DVD?
Yeah.
You're going to have to bring them up here so we can watch them.
Hey, I would love to rewatch some WCW.
Okay, we're
I don't have that many. I have...
Well, bring what you got and we will watch them because I want to see them.
Hey, I would love to do that.
What years are they? Do you know? To get a little off topic here,
I think I have two... I don't remember the years. I have two Halloween Havocs. I believe one was 99 and one was 2000.
I would love to see those because I never ordered a paper... You know, after the initial NWO thing, I ordered some pay-per-views, but I didn't order... Like, it was usually... If I had to choose between a WCW and a WWE, I was going WWE, so...
But you gotta remember, the quality is not as good.
I don't care.
Okay.
I watch bad quality stuff all the time just to watch it. So I'm not too picky about my quality as long as I can make out who's wrestling.
No, yeah, it's not that bad. But like I have the Slamboree match, the Slamboree event where Bagwell faced Roddy Piper in the boxing match. Do you remember that?
No.
Yeah, they did a boxing match, which I'm surprised Buff Bagwell won.
Because, he did?
Yeah, they never let him win a pay-per-view match, and I was so excited that they actually did. And, like, they had some stupid matches on pay-per-views with Bagwell, though. That's the thing. Like, they had his mom on a pole match.
Yeah, but that was a Vince Russo creation, a Judy Bagwell in a pole match.
Like, I mean, come on.
I don't know.
Like, why would you put your mom, someone's mom on a pole and say, go fight for her?
They say Vince Russo had a big fetish for putting... for on-a-pole matches, because, I mean, if you look at WWE, they had a lot of on-a-pole matches when he was in charge at one point. And then, you know, WCW, they've had a billion. And then TNA, if you watch TNA, just for the past couple of years, they had a lot of on-a-pole matches, which was like, okay, I can see Russo's... This is clearly Russo, because he loves these on-a-pole matches.
Russo's name is all over that.
Which I don't think they've had one. Well, he just got released, but they haven't had one in a while, so... Maybe he was not fully in charge. I don't know.
Maybe they stopped that real quick.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I would definitely bring those up, though.
Okay. So, okay, what were you getting at right before I interrupted you about bringing in tapes? Because now I cannot remember.
I don't know, because I think we were talking about Booker T and Discomfort. Oh, we were talking about the TV title.
Yeah.
And, yeah, that's what you're talking about, how ridiculous it was for a TV title to be even...
Defended on pay-per-view.
Yeah. And that's the thing with WCW is, like, the events were... They either opened with either the TV title or the Cruiserweight title.
Yeah.
They usually only had one or the other. And, you know, in the pay-per-view, like, the Cruiserweight matches were the best matches to watch. And, like, I loved the Cruiserweight division. I loved Rey Mysterio. I loved Billy Kidman. I loved Juventud Guerrero. I loved Chavo Guerrero. Like, when they were in their prime, and in their Cruiserweight prime, I should say, before, you know, Rey Mysterio got jacked up and before... All the rest of them just went downhill.
Yeah.
Like, it was...
Half of them got deported. No, I'm just kidding.
It was so fun to watch those. Like, Psychosis, I believe, was another one I loved watching. And, like, it was so fun watching these matches and getting how creative they got. And then once they decided to kill the Cruiserweight division, it pretty much... Like, they just started putting no names in there with... And barely ever defending that title or not making it. Like, they were just... A pay-per-view match would be never even talked about in, like, the Nitro or Thunder. Like, it would just be, like, randomly, this guy's facing this guy for the Cruiserweight title. Like, no one knew what the match was. They just came out. You heard the music. You're like, okay.
Yeah. It was ridiculous, the kind of, I guess you would say, abuse the Cruiserweight division got. Because, I mean, I read these books all the time. I've read Rey Mysterio's. And Eric Bischoff, which Eric Bischoff mentioned that he got the Cruiserweights to be his... I can't remember. He turned it like his car crash in the show. Like, you would just see these guys flying around and, you know, hitting each other and stuff like this. And Ray mentioned in his book pretty much that's what Eric Bischoff told him when he came in. That's what he wanted the Cruiserweight division to be. But it was like the Cruiserweight division was so much better than half the other matches you were putting on the card. And it was... There was really not too many storylines within the Cruiserweight division. It was kind of, we're just going to throw in these matches to break up the monotony of seeing these two big guys fight each other and then going into a main event where maybe you had two guys that were way past their prime but were still names, and you would throw this cruiserweight match in to please the crowd or whatever, which it was ridiculous because these guys would put on fantastic matches, but they wouldn't get anything out of it, you know, which is no build-up, whatever. We'll throw Ray in against some guy, and they'll put on a good match, and then next pay-per-view, we're just throwing another guy with no real build-up. It was just, we'll throw these guys in to put on some kind of match.
Yeah, I mean, if you go through all the cruiserweights that have ever wrestled in WCW, wrestled for the cruiserweight title, or even had the cruiserweight title, I mean, there's people that only a diehard WCW fan like me would know. Like, have you ever heard of Hector Guerrero and or Super Calo?
Oh, I've seen Super Calo just from Ray's DVD. But it was, like...
But, like, yeah, I mean, like who are these guys and why are they in this Cruiserweight title match?
Yeah.
Like, you didn't understand, like, no one understood that. Like, it was just, there was no means or anything to these guys. They were just in a title match, in their first match.
Yep.
And, like, they would obviously always lose. There's always Rey Mysterio holding the Cruiserweight title or Billy Kidman or Eddie Guerrero. Those three pretty much, no one else really held title. Hoovy may have had a couple times.
Yeah.
I believe Jericho might have had a couple times, but then they moved him to like a TV title person. And, you know, I just didn't understand. I loved watching Cruiserweight Division, but I just didn't understand like what the purpose of it was because no one knew what the actual meaning to the matches were.
Yeah, and it was ridiculous because you mentioned guys like Jericho, Guerrero, Rey Mysterio. Those guys went on to WWE
and held that the were world pushed. Title.
Yeah, and it's like, so you saw this talent in the Cruiserweight division that had the ability to be the company guy to throw that belt on, but it was like, we're just going to stick you in the Cruiserweight division with no real build-up and just let... Which was probably one of their downfalls where you kept the older guys on top and had this fantastic talent in the Cruiserweight division, but you didn't let them do anything. You know, you just let them stay in this one area, never let them getting to the main event, which they've proven they can do that in WWE.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm not saying that, like, some of what... Like, I don't know, I think it's just weird how you think of, like, Rey Mysterio, Eddie Guerrero, Chris Jericho, Chris Benoit even. You think of these guys as WWE champions. But then when you look at them in WCW, they were cruiserweight only champions or tag team champions or television titles. They never even held the US title for that matter. You know, I think Benoit might have held it once or twice, but like they never held the world title. They never even got close to a world title shot. Most of them didn't even have storylines. Benoit and Malenko had storylines, but you know, they were just four horsemen storylines. They weren't Benoit and Malenko storylines.
Yep.
And like it was like I don't know, it's just weird to think about that. Like if you ask a WWE fan, you know, who didn't watch WCW, you ask them, you know, how many times did Rey Mysterio, Chris Jericho, Chris Benoit, Eddie Guerrero combine, hold the world title in WCW, and then guarantee you no one would know that it was zero.
Yeah, because, you know, when I get a lot of, like, Rey Mysterio's DVD, I've got Eddie Guerrero's DVD and stuff, because I know there's going to be great wrestling on there. I've got, you know, Chris Jericho's, and they have these old WCW matches. And with, I'm just using Eddie Guerrero as an example here, but when Eddie Guerrero was heel... And he was doing, I can't remember what he was doing. It came out with a shirt, and I can't remember what it was. But he had the shirt, and he was super over. Like, he was a heel at the time, but, I mean, he was getting massive heat and then massive cheers at the same time. And there were so many people in the crowd, because I just remember the scene. They had this, whatever shirt he had at the time, there were so many people with the shirt, you know? And it was like, this guy's super over, but they're not doing anything with him. They're just going to throw him on here and... he's going to have a match, and that's going to be it. And it was... these guys were so over, and they never capitalized on it, which I think was one of their big downfalls. Because they had that kind of attitude where it was, we brought you in as a cruiserweight, and that's where you're going to stay. And you're not really going to have too much movement, which I think was a big mistake.
And that's the thing. Like, you compare WCW to WWF back then. WCW had the better in-ring action. they had more talent in terms of overall depth. I mean, they didn't have the entertainers like WWF had. They didn't have The Rock and Stone Cold and DX. Like, those guys entertained the crowd. They got the crowd into it. And, you know, the only thing that the WWF had was, or the WCW had, was the NWO to entertain the crowd in terms of doing stuff for the crowd. Like, do you get what I'm trying to say?
Yeah.
And, but, like, the in-ring action of WCW, and even the match types before Russo took over, like two cages, I should say. It was like War Games.
Yeah, War Games, yep.
Yeah. And, the stacked up was stupid.
Yeah.
The Ready to Rumble match. Yeah. Which is a great movie. That's one of my favorite movies of all time.
Yeah, I love it too.
But, I mean, to take it, like, that was their downfall. It's like when they took it and then they took a movie and made it reality and then had David Arquette win the world title. How much of a slap in the face is that to anyone who ever held a WWE World title that
it was
David
ridiculous.
Arquette is part of it, which, part of that past?
David Arquette, he gets a lot of heat from wrestling fans about being champion, but I'm a big David Arquette fan.
I think he's funny.
And he was a wrestling fan at the time. I think he still is, but... They said they were going to put the belt on him. He didn't want the belt to go on him because, you know, he figured, why would you do that? Because it would be a slap in the face for everyone that's held the championship. Well, obviously they ended up doing it. But I also found out every date that he worked and every paycheck that he collected, he gave to the families of Brian Pillman and Owen Hart. So he never collected anything from wrestling or anything like that. So, I mean, I've always respected him. I like him as an actor, and when I read that, it really made me respect him as a person even more, just because he initially didn't want the belt, and then he never collected any type of paycheck, really, from doing anything that he did with wrestling. So, I mean, I thought he was awesome from that aspect.
Well, see, I didn't know that. So, I didn't hate David Arquette, but, you know, I do respect him a little more than that, you know, now that you told me that. But, yeah, but I do agree. Like, I don't know... I mean, obviously, he didn't have a choice. If he was being forced to get this title put on his waist, even no matter how much a fight you put on, you can't always win.
Yeah.
As long as someone's more powerful above you. And that's what happened. I'm guessing is what happened. He put up a fight, but it didn't work out.
And, I mean, even if he didn't put up a fight for it, I couldn't hate him for it, because if they came up to me and said, we're going to put the world belt on you, and you're already a wrestling fan, and it's like... just to have your name, I wouldn't turn it. It's like, if you're going to be in the history books as world champion, why would you even turn that down? So even because I mean, from a wrestling fan, I'm a big wrestling fan and a purist. But if someone came up to me and said, we're going to put the WWE championship on you, okay, whatever, I don't care. If my name's going to be in the history books, I'll do it.
I mean, I guess you're right. Yeah, I guess you're right.
Okay, so yeah, but. We kind of got off topic. We kind of just evolved here.
Just talking about everything.
But, I don't know, we're on Ready to Rumble. I love that movie. You said it was one of your favorite. Casey Church up here at the station absolutely hates that movie.
What?
Yep.
I mean, if you're going to watch it as a good wrestling movie, no, of course you're going to hate it. If you're going to watch it as a comedy movie and then you also like wrestling, it's a great movie.
Yeah, it's not something to be taken seriously like, all wrestling fans are like this or something like that. You know, it's just a fun comedy movie to watch. And every time it's on TV, I love to watch it, which I'm going to have to buy the DVD because it's not on TV nearly enough,
well,
I think.
I'll next time I see it in my store, I'll get it for you.
There you go. Yep, you got dibs on it. And I'll get it from you.
Or we can have a
viewing party.
Yeah, viewing party. I'll bring it over because I have it. But
okay, yeah, we'll just... have viewing parties. I'm going to have to watch it like every 2 weeks, though, because I love Ready to Rumble. But
it's a great movie. Like, yeah. I mean, like Sean Sugar Daddy Dawkins. Come on.
Which I read Ray's book, and he actually, we mentioned, you know, he's been injured.
Whose book?
Ray Mysterio's.
Oh, okay.
He actually got injured on set.
For Ready to Rumble?
Yep. He tore up his knee doing, he was working with Shane Helms at the time. I think he was stunt double for one of the guys. I'm not sure who it was, but he talks about he went to do a Frankensteiner off the top rope, and he lands and just like blows out his knee. He said he heard it like rip as he was coming down. He just like heard his knee just rip, because I don't think he was already injured coming back from the knee injury, and then he came out and did the stunt work and like tore his knee up again.
Wait, so was he doing the Frankenstein off the top rope during the filming?
During filming.
Well, then he was doing it to Prince Iaukea.
Prince Iaukea? Okay, then there you go. Prince Iaukea. I thought, see, you know, you're a WCW guy, I'm not.
Mm-hmm.
We could bring up Prince Iaukea now, the artist formerly known as Prince Iaukea.
That was the stupidest gimmick I've ever seen. No, okay, I've seen worse. But that's the stupidest thing that I've ever seen at that time. Because then it started to get really bad.
Because I'm
gimmicks.
I remember them bringing in Prince Iaukea. I remember just seeing him randomly on TV one time. I don't think there was any build up or anything. That
same
was
with
like
all cruiserweights. They're just randomly in there.
Prince Iaukea, and then he went on a winning streak for about like a month or two.
Yeah, he gained popularity, and like, I mean, there's a lot of them like that just randomly showed up, but then they started doing winning streaks, and fans got behind them, but then they never were on TV again. Like Kaz Hayashi, do you remember him?
Oh yeah, I love Kaz Hayashi. The Young Dragons.
Who was in that?
Jamie Noble.
Yes.
Jimmy Yang and Kaz Hayashi.
Yes, I remember that.
And they had that big feud with Three Count.
Evan Courageous, Shannon Moore, and Sugar. Or no, it wasn't Shane Helms.
It was
Shane Helms.
Yep, Shane Helms.
Because he wasn't Greg Helms at the time. Okay.
I thought there was another team at that point that they were feuding with. It was like a big three. Man, like three group thing. I thought it was, but I can't remember for sure if it was or not.
I remember those three being the main feud, but maybe there was someone else. I don't remember. I know there was. They feuded a lot with this guy named Kid Romeo.
I remember Kid Romeo. Yep.
And I don't remember who Kid Romeo's partner was.
I have no clue. I've got a couple of Japanese tapes. I watch Japanese wrestling. And I was watching. I don't know if you know who Jushin Thunder Liger is or not. But,
I've heard the name.
He's, you know, Japanese legend or whatever. And I'm watching one of his matches, and Kid Romeo just pops up randomly in one of the like 6-man tag matches. I'm like, that's a guy from WCW. What's he doing on here? Because you know he didn't have a fantastic career to be at the point where he's facing Jushin Thunder Liger in Japan or something like that. So I was like, what's Kid Romeo doing in this match?
I liked Kid Romeo.
I like Kid Romeo,
but
too.
He started to get big once WCW went out, so I guess his career never really took off.
Yeah.
But, I mean, so many careers in WCW could have been, but they just would have got the necessary push.
I was a big fan of Elix Skipper.
Primetime?
Yeah. I loved him back, because I thought was
that was WCW?
Yeah.
Was he?
He was in Team Canada. Was it Team Canada? Is that what they called their group? With Lance Storm and...
Yeah. Team Canada. It was him. Who else was in that? It was Tim.
Jim Duggan was in it at one point, I remember.
Yeah,
like
he was the traitor. And like, yeah, I remember that. But yeah, Lance Storm. Like, I loved to hate Lance Storm. I liked him as a wrestler. I thought he was phenomenal, but I loved to hate him because he was like perfect guy to hate.
Yeah. He was... I loved the storyline when they brought him in. He was winning all the championships and renaming them. Like, the Canadian belt, I can't remember what he named the...
I can't remember. I remember that. I don't remember what he named all these titles, though.
Yeah, he had, like, the Cruiserweight belt. He changed to, like, under whatever kilos or whatever instead of the Cruiserweight Championship. But, yeah, I loved the dying days of WCW. Well, when they were bringing in guys like Landstorm, and I remember Shane Douglas was big at that one point, I was enjoying WCW at that point because I like Shane Douglas and I like Landstorm, and they were bringing in Elix Skipper and everything, and I thought... If they started pushing the younger guys, because they had a lot of great younger talent, if they started pushing these guys, they would have been fine. But, I mean, of course, the obstacles they've suffered.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, they brought all these guys. Like, remember they brought in, they brought in, like, a whole like, cluster of guys towards the end. They brought in, like, Mark Jindrak and Sean O'Hare and Sean Stasiak. And, like, you remember these
Chuck
guys?
Chuck Palumbo.
And they bring these guys in, and they brought in those two Italian guys, the Mama Lukes.
Big Vito and...
Giant the Bull.
Yep.
And they bring all these guys in, and most of those guys, once they got purchased, still competed in WWE when they were under WCW brand. And side note. Trivia question for you. Who was the first WCW match inside WWE?
Would that have been Booker T and Buff Bagwell?
Yes. You know how excited I was for that.
Which, I heard a story.
I'm sure I heard the same story, but go ahead. I know what you're about to say.
Are we talking about Buff Bagwell?
We got, after that match, you got fired?
No, I just heard before the match, I can't remember who was talking to him, but they said, we're kind of introducing you guys to the WWE audience because they may not know who you are because you're from WCW. And Buff Bagwell was like, don't worry about it, don't worry about it. I was big in WCW. They're all going to know me. The crowd's going to go wild, just see or whatever. So then they said, they introduced him and he walks out and the crowd is completely dead because no one knows who he is. I just thought it was funny that, you know, he thought he was going to get this big reaction. Apparently he didn't.
Well, I heard he got fired after that match.
Yeah.
Because of he did some backstage antics, or he pretty much he got his ego went through the roof because he was wrestling. He was the only wrestler in WCW that were in that one event, and like he was like treating like the people like shit behind the stage and stuff, and they just said, who are you to start doing all this? Get out of here. Gone. Never again was he ever seen on TV, besides maybe a couple appearances on TNA, but that's a side story. Back to my original point about all these guys coming in. WWE brings these guys in, and even when they were gone, they still use these guys. Like even after they got rid of the WCW brand, they still use these guys in their own wrestling. Like they used Sean Stasiak. They gave him his own gimmick, Planet Stasiak. Do you remember that? And then they used, I don't think they kept Mark Jindrak, but they kept Sean O'Hare and Chuck Palumbo. You know, they made Chuck Palumbo into Billy and Chuck. That was the stupidest thing, but it was highly successful, and people loved it, though.
Yeah.
And then they took Sean O'Hare, and he was gone for a little bit, but then they used him as, like, a big return. Do you remember this? Like, there was videos promoting his return.
The,
like,
everyone calls it the Devil's Advocate story or whatever, where it's like, I'm not telling you anything you don't already know and stuff like that. Which there was, that gimmick had, online, that is, like, one of the biggest blunders for WWE, everyone says it. With the build-up he had and everything, when he was brought in, he could have did huge things. And then they kind of just stuck him with Roddy Piper as his bodyguard against Rikishi or some kind of feud, and it was kind of like he went nowhere. After Roddy Piper was fired, left Sean O'Hare with nothing to do because they didn't capitalize on how they were bringing him in, and they kind of just dropped it and brought him in with Roddy Piper. I don't know. But that was a big missed opportunity anyway. But yeah, go on.
Yeah, I mean, like, that's what I was going to say. Like, what was, like, I know that they promoted him coming, but, like, he was barely there, and, like, he's such a huge fan. Like, they would do, like, for, like, the whole month leaning in, they would do, like, you know, these videos on the Titantron saying how he's coming, and they had the date and all this stuff, and he did nothing. Like, it was just, he amounted to nothing in terms of the day. And he wasn't even untalented.
You know, he was very talented. He was a
big guy, and you can jump off the rope and do cruiserweight stuff. Like, he was, like, really impressive to watch. I loved watching Sean O'Hare, but, like, I don't know. Maybe he just wasn't good backstage. Like, they couldn't get along or...
Well, I had heard they were going to throw him with Piper, and then he was supposed to get a huge push after that. Like, it was going to culminate in some big push with him and Roddy Piper. Something was going to happen there. But Roddy Piper got fired for making those comments, I think, on some kind of HBO documentary about drugs and wrestling and stuff like that. So they released him right then, which left Sean O'Hare with nothing to do because they kind of dropped his original gimmick to put him with Piper. And it was like, okay, he was pretty much banished to Velocity at that point because he didn't have Roddy Piper, and they already dropped the old gimmick that he was going to have that could have worked for him. So it was pretty much he was on Velocity for, I don't know, about a year, and then he was released. Sean O'Hare could have been something really good because he had the size and he had the talent. And
he just needed the experience and the exposure.
Yep. And then, like you said, I think Mark Jindrak was a big missed opportunity as well.
Yeah, they were a good tag team, those two.
Yeah.
I don't even think he even made the WWE. Like, when
They brought him as the Reflection of Perfection. Do you remember that gimmick?
Mm-mm.
Almost like a narcissist gimmick where he would look at himself in the mirror. And Teddy Long was like his manager at the point, which Teddy Long was phenomenal getting heel heat as a manager. And I mean, those two, Mark Jindrak could have went places and they didn't capitalize on it. And then he was released after that. So
I honestly don't remember that.
You can have,
but I will say this for WWE. They at least even though they didn't capitalize on it, they at least put a video out saying this guy is coming. Mm-hmm. Had a build up for him. They didn't, like WWE, they just didn't throw him in a match.
And yeah.
This is who he is, and have him win four matches and then not see him for 2 months.
Yeah, which WWE was good about that. And obviously, you don't watch it on a regular basis anymore, but now they're starting to get in a WCW routine where they're bringing up a guy from developmental, put him in a match, and it's like this guy's got no build up or anything like that. And they'll kind of start giving him a little push, and they'll kind of just drop it after a few weeks.
I know what you're talking about. Like, I hear people talking about, like, I hear, like, the most common one is Kofi Kingston.
Mm-hmm.
How he always is getting brought up and then put in these big matches, but then never doing anything again.
Yeah.
And it's just a repeat process. Same with, Evan Bourne? Is he another one that's like that? So, I mean, I know a little bit about the current stuff that's going on, but I don't watch it
on a regular basis.
Giant the Bull even made WWE for a little bit, too.
He did. And I like
Stamboli.
I like that recreation of the FBI.
Full Blood Hines. Yeah. Was he in that?
Yes, he was. In the WWE's version, he was. Yeah, Nunzio and Chuck Palumbo. And I love that version, and that kind of just lost momentum. But they were getting a good push, and then after that, it kind of just went nowhere. But I'm a big fan of Johnny Stamboli. I've enjoyed him. From when he came in WCW, I liked him a lot. And then when he came over, I was glad to see him over.
He got nothing in WCW. Like, he was, like, Big Vito was the guy.
Yeah. And Big Vito and WWE, were you around when they started putting him in a dress?
I mean, I was obviously.
Did you see it?
This was after the purchase?
Yeah, this was, like, years after the purchase, though. Not immediately afterwards.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure I watched it.
Yeah, he was like.
I don't think I got out of it by then.
He was wearing a dress and he had a thong on under it. It was, like, weird.
Nope.
It was really weird.
I don't remember that at all. Thank God I don't remember that at all.
Yeah, I don't know what they were thinking there, but that was like towards the end before he left. But yeah, a lot of missed opportunities from bringing guys from WCW over to WWE. A lot of missed opportunities. Even with some more established guys like Scott Steiner. Obviously, he didn't have the talent because he had injuries.
But they did bring him back. They had him in WWE for a little bit.
Yeah, and they started. He was
on the road, I think he came in.
It was like 2003. And he was started off strong in the main event, but he wasn't performing to the level they wanted him to perform at because of injuries. And then he was kind of like banished to Sunday Night Heat until he was released. So it was like, you know, you have a guy like Scott Steiner, the caliber of Scott Steiner on Sunday Night Heat, feuding with Test.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Test had big pushes too throughout WWE.
But not at that point in time, he didn't. It was kind of just like a Sunday Night Heat, whatever feud, and it was...
Well, Johnny Stamboli was, before the FBI, he was a Heat guy only, too.
Yeah,
like, he
and then
like
afterward.
He had a winning streak on Heat or something, him and D'Lo Brown, same way.
And then after the FBI, he was kind of banished to Velocity, and then he was released, and Johnny Stamboli, I think he's in some MTV Lucha Libre USA. He was, anyway. I don't know if that is even still going or anything like that, but, yep.
Well, he'll probably never be in WWE again.
I don't think so. Sure he's still built. I don't know. I'd like to see him back. But he's doing a masked gimmick right now.
Yeah, you know, actually, I did hear about that now. He was in...
He was in TNA for a little while.
Yes.
Yep.
Using that gimmick?
Yep.
Yeah, okay.
I thought so. Relic is what they call him.
Relic?
Killer spelled backwards.
Oh, okay, I get it.
So they go with, because originally on the independent scene he was called Red Rum, which is murder spelled backwards, and then obviously TNA wanted to trademark whatever, so they came up with Relic, killer spelled backwards, almost the same thing. So they go with that, but yeah, I don't know.
Well, you know, hey, let me ask you this, because you watch wrestling now. This is a little off topic, but how? Okay, I watched Tough Enough. Okay. Mm-hmm. The new one, the one that was just on.
Yeah.
And the guy, Andy, that won it, has he ever been on? No?
No. He's not been on TV. He's in FCW. He was suspended a few months ago for failing the drug testing.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so he's not off to a good start. I hear a lot of people in FCW don't even like him. So, I don't know.
I hated the guy.
Yeah, so did I.
I wanted Luke to win compared
to
him.
You want me to win?
I would have voted for you. I've seen your videos.
Thank you.
But, you know, yeah, I would have voted for – if I had a chance, I would have voted for Luke over Andy. Mm-hmm. I mean, Andy was a crybaby.
Yeah, it was.
He was a whiner. Like, I didn't think he was a good wrestler at all. And he – the only thing he ever was good at is getting angry.
Yeah.
But you need more than just anger to win over.
And he looked kind of awkward to me. I don't know. He didn't look like – he doesn't have that star persona.
He's not fluid.
Yeah. And apparently, I think I told you this way back when, he was one of the guys that had a contract originally and was released from that contract So it was pretty much, you know, fixed. It was like this guy's – they spun it as this was his dream and everything like that. But he had already accomplished it because
– he had already had a contract.
Yeah, so it didn't really matter. So I don't know. M-Dog 20, Matt Crush should have won it. I stand by that. I always will stand by it. And it's ridiculous that he doesn't have a contract with WWE or TNA at this point.
And you were one of the – he was one of the first ones off the show, right?
Yep. He was like the first guy off the show, which was completely ridiculous.
There was the one guy that I thought was really good, but then he got hurt. I don't remember his name now. Do you remember? He had the dark hair.
That guy. I forgot his name.
He was really good.
Yeah.
Like, I was like – I wanted him to win. I thought he was going to win. Then he blew out his
– something or other. I remember him and –
He blew out his leg or something.
Yeah. I remember that guy. I cannot remember his name, though.
And like Hugh Morris loved him.
Mm-hmm.
What's his name now? Hugh Morris. Like, what's his real name?
Bill DeMott.
Bill DeMott. That's it, yeah. Bill DeMott loved him. And
it was surprising to me that everyone that they signed that didn't win, they were all women. Like, and most of the women on there were terrible. Like,
the first one was terrible. The first one that got eliminated.
And she got a contract.
Yeah, she had a contract going in, right?
No, she didn't have a contract going in. She got a contract afterward. And she's one of...
Because she's good-looking.
Yeah.
That's all that matters.
And then Alicia Fox's sister had a contract going in, and then...
Christina?
Yeah. Is that? And then she was released from it, and then, you know, they just re-signed her afterward.
What about that one girl I heard? I saw her on news or something recently, the one that was in there, like Rima or whatever her name was.
Oh, Rima Fakia. The Miss USA or whatever.
Yeah.
She's not, as far as I know, she's not doing anything right now. She got in trouble for like drunk driving in Michigan, apparently.
Maybe that's what I saw.
Yeah,
I think
that's probably what you saw.
Like something, you know, within the last couple months.
Yep. And that was the last I've heard of her. As far as I know, she's not pursuing anything in wrestling. So
she's good looking. I like watching her. But yeah, she was not a good wrestler, though. None of those girls were. None.
Yeah.
The only guys that even were Luke. And that one dude, the one that we can't remember his name.
And Matt Cross, he was good.
Yeah, well, I didn't see much about him. You know all his YouTube videos and all that.
Yeah, go watch him on YouTube. He's phenomenal. Yeah, so I don't know. I guess we've been going for about an hour now, so we should probably wrap it up here on the 10 count podcast.
Yeah, we didn't even get to like how we started out in wrestling.
I know. We kind of just went
full into it.
Full into it.
It's on the table.
I don't know. It was fun. I enjoyed it.
I enjoyed it, too.
A lot of chemistry here, I feel.
I think it was perfect.
All right.
We had stumbles in the beginning, but I think we ironed it
out. We worked them out. So, yeah, next week we will have a top 10 wrestlers of all time, objective list. We will go over who we think our favorites are, but we'll put together a top 10 of who are the best from 1992 or the early 2000s, so we're probably going to go 90 to 2002, I would say.
Okay.
Do the top 10 objectively. Well, so we're going to bring in our lists and then argue it out till we get a final top 10. So, yeah, I'm Luke Janesco.
I'm Tony Romano.
And we'll see you next week here for the 10 Count Podcast. The bad boys are wrestling, testing competition when the war does the mission. Not no mercy, see the race like the street. If you don't know, you better find out the war pack. It'll prove a point. Number one, best believe that you don't want to test it with them. I'll be there for them, coming to grave with them. You're never walking out again.